Theater wants to go see an incredible Ben-Hur screening. I love Ben-Hur, but I fell asleep, and when I woke up, there were two guys doing it on the screen. Pothole squeegee guys. You could do whatever you want to a squeegee guy. I mean, those guys aren't even citizens. They're animals. So sometimes they'd squeegee, and I'd go, "You want to ride in the limo?" And we'd have fun. And I'm just doing to the immigrants what Rudy did to the squeegee guys. You say, "Get out of here!" And where are they? Where are they now? Nobody knows. They're squeegeeing somewhere, probably in Syria or in Afghanistan. There's plenty of places to squeegee. We don't need to do it in New York. The Statue of Liberty was something I tried to buy, but they told me I couldn't. What an incredible penthouse apartment in her head. Have you seen this beautiful apartment on the top of her head? It's a totally hollow place. Build it out like a building.
So what made you expand your empire out of New York into New Jersey? Why did you focus so much on New Jersey and Florida during this time?
I knew that New Jersey and Florida were cheaper places to build. One, so incredible. Two, in New Jersey, let's just face it, you had the guys, the connected guys, very easy to get building permits. And I wanted to expand because I felt more at home. I did a lot of business in Atlantic City with those guys. Because in AC, you bet big, you cash out, you go home, or you go bankrupt and then go home. Either way, somebody foots the bill. You end up at home, and it feels like home because it is. Now, Florida, I'll never forget it. I flew down to Florida. I was driving around. The driver was in the front seat, and we're driving past all the big properties in Palm Beach, all of them, and they're so incredible. And the guy says, "Mr. Trump," you know, because they all talk to me, and I talk to them, and he goes, "Mr. Trump," and I say, "Call me Donald," and he says, "No, I know that's a trick," and I say, "It's not a trick." He says, "Mr. Trump." I go, "Swear to God, call me Donald." And he goes, "Okay, I'll call you Donald." And I go, "You're tricked. Call me Mr. Trump." And then he says to me, "What places are you looking at?" I said I wanted something big. I wanted to buy a bunch of condos and string them together, but I couldn't find a property that could do that. And then he mentioned Mar-a-Lago, said it was a sprawling place. And I go, "I gotta see it." I went to see it, and I fell in love. I knew this was a place where I could put too much furniture, tapestries on all the walls, and weird oil paintings of myself in every room. And I did. Mar-a-Lago is my first love. It's a woman in every way. She's wet and salty. She's by the sea, warm interiors that keep you comfortable, a place that feeds you and keeps you comfortable at night, and fun to say, Mar-a-Lago. Mar-a-Lago. None of my wives quite had it right. That perfect combination of vowel and L. And she'll live on forever. And apparently it means something in another language. It means, "Don't take my house," in Indian. By the late 80s, neon was all the rage. People were starting to wear bright colors, electric colors, shoulder pads. People were rollerblading instead of roller skating. And then the wall came down. And it was the saddest day of my life. There's nothing more sad than when a wall goes down. And ever since then, I've wanted another wall to go up. And that's why I wanted to try to buy the Berlin Wall and put it on the southern border of the United States. And who knows? And we'll see what happens in November of 2020 when I take pieces of the Berlin Wall and pieces of the World Trade Center and turn them into the wall that will end this country. At last. The end. Have you ever been in love?
Yes, of course. I'm married.
I've loved, loved and lost, loved and found. I got around. I had a little bit of fun. Hold on. I wanted to get this going. Hold on.
You're making a call?
No, just turning the ringer off. On, off. Go ahead. Ask me. Ask me about the women.
Well, it sounds like you were a real playboy back then.
Is your wife around? Is your wife here?
No, she's not, sir.
You want to go to D.C. Tits? You ever been to D.C. Tits?
D.C. Tits, sir?
Yeah, it's a topless club.
No, sir.
In a black neighborhood.
I'm all right, sir. I'd really like to get through the book today.
Want to hop on a plane and go to Colorado Cummies?
What's that?
That's a club out in Denver.
No, sir. I'd really prefer not to.
Really? I could get some girls out there.
I'd like to stick to the task at hand, sir.
You want some girls? Come on.
No, sir.
You'll do it.
No, sir.
You do it.
No, sir. Maybe another time.
Hear that, honey? You hear that, baby? Hello?
Yeah, it sounded like you said another time, maybe, in a polite way.
Your husband's cheating on you. Why don't you just fuck me then, huh? He's cheating on you. Do me.
I don't think he is, Mr. President.
I'll give you $200,000 at the end of it and treat you like a whore.
No, sir, that's really not what I'm about.
Really? You sure?
Yes.
Your voice doesn't sound like that. Your voice sounds like you're all about it.
Sir, I really think we should end this here.
You're married to this guy, right? He drinks, you know. I don't drink. I have fun, but I don't drink.
Honey?
I'm joking. I'm joking. We're having fun.
You can go, Peg. I'm going to hang up.
No, you hang up first.
I will.
No, you.
I am.
You first.
She hung up, sir.
I have a new crush.
Call John Barron and Page 6, October 5th, 1991.
Hello, hello, John Barron here. Is this Page 6?
Yes, it is.
It's John Barron.
Hello, Donald.
Excuse me, hello, what?
Hello, Mr. Trump.
What?
Hello, Mr. Trump.
He's not here.
Okay.
You want to talk to Donald Trump?
If he's available.
I'll see if he's available, but first I want to tell you something that's so incredible. I mean, this is really incredible. I don't know if you've seen the stories or you report the stories, or you've seen anything about this, Donald Trump, great man, one of the great men, great guy, great builder in New York City, very valuable, lots of money, lots of prestige.
I know who you are.
So incredible.
I know who you are.
John Barron, that's who I am.
I've talked to you and your boss a number of...
Don? He's one of the great bosses. Great guy. Incredible holdings. He has some of the great holdings. And a little birdie told me, a little birdie whispered in my ear. And that's hard because when a birdie whispers in your ear, they're pecking in it. You have to hold very still and let him whisper because his beak will pierce your eardrum. If you twitch, he'll fly away and you'll never know the secret. Are you listening?
I'm listening.
Be very still. Donald Trump is going to dinner with none other than Kate and Allie, Susan St. James tonight.
Okay, thank you.
Susan St. James, incredibly beautiful woman.
I know who she is.
Kate and Allie, one of the great hit shows on television.
Where are you dining tonight?
Kate and Allie, a sitcom about two women, single women, trying to make it in their lives, and they're so strong.
I know the show.
Strong women. And they've got the other one from SNL. Who's the other one? Jane Curtin. She's funny, but let's face it. She's got to be funny. Let's face it. Trump gets the best one. Susan St. James. He went to a taping, and I'm just going to tell you what happened. Donald Trump went to a taping, flew out to Los Angeles, and went to a taping of Kate and Allie. And after the taping, he charged down the steps, and people are saying, what's this guy doing? Where's this guy going? Jumped over the railing, ran onto the studio stage screaming, Susan, 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 Susan. And everyone realized, this is Donald Trump. And I was there. I was John Barron. And I had the same suit and glasses. And it's true. It turns out they weren't done shooting. And Trump had ruined the main scene that they had tried to shoot 15 times. So Donald said, you gotta go to dinner with me. You gotta go to dinner with me. You gotta go to dinner with me. And eventually Susan St. James started to cry and shake and said, fine, I will. And we never did, but we would have had an incredible meal.
Mr. Trump?
Hello? Oh.
Thank you for the call.
Call. John Barron and Fortune Magazine, June 7th, 1996.
Hello, this is John Barron.
Yes, I had several messages from this number.
Yeah, you wanted to reach my client. As you know, I'm Donald Trump's publicist.
Oh, you represent Mr. Trump.
I represent Mr. Trump, an incredible guy, incredible businessman. As you know, he's a great guy. And, of course, you know, there's been a lot of rumors lately, a lot of rumors about his worth, his financials.
I haven't heard anything.
Well, apparently there have been a lot of rumors about his worth.
I haven't heard anything.
You know, what assets are liquid?
I haven't heard people talk about this at all.
Yeah, well, I'm here to call and tell you that people are talking about it.
I haven't heard.
Well, you're hearing it now.
Well, it sounds like bad news anyway. You're telling me you represent Mr. Trump and he doesn't have a lot of liquidity?
No, I have incredible liquidity. I mean, he has incredible liquidity.
Well, the fact that you're bringing it up raises questions for me.
No, excuse me. He has incredible liquidity. He's liquid all over the place. He makes liquid. He's got liquid. He's got a lot of jars. He's got liquid all over the place. He's liquid everywhere.
All right. Well, good to know.
And excuse me.
I'm just not sure what this call is in response to. You left me several messages.
Mr. Trump wants to be included on the Fortune 500 list. He's been overlooked because, you know, he stands to make a serious amount of money, an incredible amount of money, a lot of money, more money than you could imagine.
Well, we could get him on the list next year.
No, this year. This year he made it.
You said he stands to make it.
No, he's making it now. He's making it right now.
Look, I mean, these lists are for fun, you know?
No!
It's good publicity. I understand your position.
Excuse me, no. My position, it's not my position. It's Donald Trump's position.
Well, it's your position because you represent him.
Well, I'm John Barron.
You're the publicist. It's normal for me to talk to the publicist, so that's your position.
That's his position, not my position, though.
Part of the fun of these lists is that people drop off, people come back on, you know? Our readers understand that the marketplace can be volatile and that fortunes ebb and flow for a variety of reasons, and that's why a snapshot of the wealthiest people...
Your readers are going, what's happening with Trump? What's going on with Trump? What's Trump doing? Trump's on the TV. Trump's showing up on Donahue. Trump's everywhere. Listen to me. Trump runs everything. He's all over the place. You know, we just got a property. We're just working on an additional property at the LaGuardia Terminal. It's going to be an incredible two-story storage unit. It's going to be incredible. You can store all kinds of cargo, things like that.
All right, sir. I don't think my readers are going to be interested in an air cargo storage facility.
Are you kidding me? Haven't you ever read air cargo news? Listen, I don't want to say anything, but I hear that Donald Trump's going to be in the alleyway near Studio 54 tomorrow, trying to get in the back through a door that's been left unlocked.
I don't understand.
I'm just saying, if a certain Forbes reporter wanted to catch Donald Trump having a great time and see how much money he has, that would be a perfect opportunity.
The process for reporting your income for the purposes of our story is well-defined. As a publicist, I imagine you already know what it is.
I do, but you should tell me.
Well, we do a survey of publicly available information in terms of your holdings and tax disclosures, and then we take personal information direct from the source or the source organization to verify everything. We count personal funds, real estate holdings, other...
He's got so much real estate.
Well, it sounds to me like the company has holdings.
He's the holdings. He's the guy who holds it.
If the company has holdings, then Mr. Trump's personal share would be based on the ownership structure of the company.
He's the company!
Which I believe is split between multiple family members, wives, ex-wives, shareholders.
No. It all changed today. Trump owns 98, 99, maybe even more.
Well, fax me over a document to that effect, because that would be a story.
Fax?
Interview. The tallest building in New York. Asterisk. Let's talk about Trump Tower. You tore down the original Bonwit Teller building and built your 75-story tower.
85. And first off, yeah, of course we tore it down and built another building. That's how you build, dummy. You stick to golf.
I will, sir.
Trump Tower is the greatest tower. You can't see a single illustration of New York City without Trump Tower shining and gleaming over the rest. It's the most obvious building. Way more obvious than the Twin Towers. Way more identifiable than the Empire State Building or that Freedom Tower. Haven't they blown that up yet? Would anybody care? Our building is beautiful, clear, and crisp. Right next to Tiffany's. And I don't mean my backup daughter.
Tell me about building it.
We started construction in 1979, and it was a big job, let me tell you. There was a lot of negotiation, a lot of union stuff we had to deal with. And, you know, the unions are tough, and they're not always good. They're always trying to railroad you. Too many regulations, too many slowdowns, shutdowns. So I did it. I scabbed it, and I didn't care. Because these electricians, doesn't matter. You get five Mexican guys. They know how to wire a building. Then we noticed the building was too small. So I said, why don't we just cut out 10 of the floors and then up the number? Then it went from 75 to an 85-story building. And then it was just right. And I made sure we imported fine reflective copper metal substitute. I got beautiful near gold plating. I got imitation marble floor mats to lay on the concrete. It was a dream come true. A lot of work went into that tower, let me tell you. But we had to get the tenants.
Businesses or people in the apartments?
We got both. We got Tower Records. We love Tower Records. And we said this is a perfect match business-wise because this is a tower. And to have a tower in the basement, it was a little joke for everybody. And everyone got it, and they all laughed. They all laughed all the time. So much fun. And we got the best people moving into Trump Tower, Bruce Willis, Marla Gibbs, and a bunch of incredible LLCs. I love the LLCs. They're a great family. I love the LLCs. They're all so wonderful. Martha Ray, Miss Dentures herself lives here. It's incredible. Tony Bennett's cousin, and the Russians help too. The Russians help with a lot of properties. They put a lot of money in, and I said, yeah, you want to keep it here? Go for it. And they'd never move in, which is great because then you could rent to somebody else and make extra money. I also had my hands in a lot of poker rooms in the 1980s and 90s. And again, there's the Russians. These Russian guys were tough, and they ran great poker games. I would skim a little bit off the top of all the gambling, which was a good deal, but don't tell anyone because it was illegal. Giuliani's a good friend. He's a good friend. And when we finished it, I said, I went to the top, and I took each of my children, and I dangled them off the roof of the tower, and I held them, and I said, do you believe in Daddy now? Do you believe in Daddy now? You said I couldn't do it, but I did! And then I would drop one of their legs, but I would pick them up and put them back in on the tower roof, and then I'd tell the other ones they made me do it. So I told Ivanka that Marla made me hang her, I told Don Jr. that Ivanka made me, and I told Eric that Don Jr. did it. And I told Grimace that all the kids wanted him hung over the tower, but the only sad truth is I lost my grip on Grimace, and he fell to his death. You can still see the stain in the street. I didn't know they bled red or had human bodies inside them.
Archivist's note. They show CMN in my hotel gym and at half the bars in D.C. when there's no ball game on. To hear them tell it, the country is in dire straits because of Donald Trump. I wonder how they can even see the country from up there in their ivory tower. President Trump just legalized ivory imports again, but if you think they won't find a way to spin that negatively, I have an elephant to sell you. If you hadn't guessed, I don't much care for cable news. Before I came to Washington, I used to think there wasn't enough real news to fill a 24-hour news cycle. Now that I'm behind the scenes, I know there is plenty of news. They just managed to get it all wrong. I've seen up close how the media lies. They're blinded by their own feelings of illegitimacy that they project onto the president. My wife, Peg, says she's not sure she would vote for Donald Trump again. But she took his call today, didn't she? Because men like him command respect, even from people who say he turns them off. They know they can't stand in the way of his power and the power of what he represents, a return to order, reclaiming the birthright of the Americans who built this country. If the country is falling apart, the pathological weakness that has chained our national spirit is to blame. Weakness has made us vulnerable to the hordes of vermin that would devour us while we sleep. Donald Trump is strong. The people around him are strong because of him. I am strong because I am with them, because I belong. Let the millennials take the best stools at the trendy bars on their biracial dates where they drink old fashions under Edison bulbs and complain that white men haven't ever done anything right. They don't see what's coming. They won't be ready. And neither will CNN. Interview. Holy matrimony. Let's talk about marriage.
I love weddings. Lots of drunk skirts. Are you married?
Yes, you spoke to my wife on the phone yesterday.
Oh, that's right. Peggy. I like your wife. I call her sometimes.
Right. Well, so you've been divorced twice.
Yes, there were a lot of women.
Yes, sir.
A lot of women.
We were saying you're well known for that, sir.
A lot of women. A lot of women. Oh, yeah.
Are you all right, sir?
Oh, God, a lot of women. Just thinking about it.
You're soaking wet, sir.
Yeah, I get sweaty when I think about all those hot ladies in the 70s I was doing. I used to wait online at Studio 54, and half the time, I get turned away. So I would go to a little place called Plato's Retreat. It was in the Upper West Side, and they had a delicious seafood buffet. And in the basement, they had a bunch of mattresses. You could do anybody you wanted. Buck Henry used to hang out there. Buck Henry was there, and let's just say there are a number of stained mattresses somewhere in a museum. Incredible history. Anyway, then I met Ivana, and she was, I mean, listen, could I have done better? Of course I could have. But I knew she had the genes to make a beautiful daughter. I had a dream. A great crow with seven eyes appeared and spoke to me. And it said, you have the most beautiful daughter, and she will be your wife.
This is Ivana?
Ivana gave me my wife.
Well, I'm not sure I understand.
It was 1976, give or take. It was an incredible party, and this beautiful woman came in with her friends. And they couldn't get a seat at the restaurant. So I went over to the maitre d', because I knew the guy, and I said, listen to me, you got to get these honeys a table, because I think I can get with them. So he went over to a table of the poorest people in the restaurant and said, get out of here, you poor garbage, or you'll eat in the street. They had a busboy chase them away with a mop. So I said, Ivana, you're coming home with me. And she said, absolutely not. And she didn't. And I said, this is a shrewd woman, because I would have hit and run, because there was no DNA, and the rules were different at the time. But because she said no to me, I said, now I'm going to have you for life, just like my presidency. And we got together, and it was wonderful. We took the jets, we had the caviar, we ate the Bellinis, we drove everywhere you could drive, we flew everywhere you could fly, and when we couldn't do that, we got on a boat. But we did it. And then I said to her, will you be the love of my life and marry me and sign this non-disclosure agreement and various other legal documents so that we could be joined together so that no one will know what I'm like in private or the fact that I sometimes get rough with people? And we did. And we did great business together, and we have a lot of great memories. We did a Pizza Hut commercial together, and that was a lot of fun. We did a McDonald's. Oh, no, that was Grimace. That wasn't Ivana.
You and Ivana had three children.
Ivana was a great mother. I was working on the business. I didn't have time. The kids would play Legos in the office, but mostly I ignored them. She'd take them to the park. She'd take them over here. She'd take them over there. And then she'd bring them in to me, and she'd go, let me introduce you to your children. This is Ivana. This is Don Jr. This is Eric. And this is Ivanka. And when I looked at my daughter, it was like time stopped. My vision went blurry, and everything melted away when I saw her. I mean, what a beauty. And I said, that's me and Ivana combined to make Ivanka? Wow, she got the great genes. Only the best parts. Listen, I'm a good-looking guy, but I can't compete with Ivanka. She'd win a talent show. She'd win the beauty pageant every time. And I'll tell you this. We've done family swimsuit competitions. She always cleans up. And I'm the judge. I make the boys do the swimsuits with bags over their heads so you can't tell the difference. It's like a couple of hot pairs rolled into the room. But my boys are wonderful. Eric, Don Jr., and Grimace. A lot of people don't know this, but when Eric was born, he was just teeth and gums. We put it in a special tank and grew the rest of the parts from other babies that passed away in the ER that night. You know, they caught a case of the pillows. And Don Jr., I remember when I gave him my name, we stood in my office looking out at Central Park, and I put my arm around him and said, together we could own this town.
So you left Ivana for Marla Maples.
Well, this was the time when I worked a lot of hours. It was very busy. I was spending a lot of time out at gala events because, as you know, I do a lot of charity. And one day I met this beautiful woman, Marla Maples. And she had just been on Gary Hart's boat. She was with Gary Hart, who was running for president. They were having a big affair, but couldn't do it because this guy's a politician. And I always beat politicians. So when she broke up with him after the photos surfaced, she ran right into my arms and she went, "Donald, Donald, you gotta save me." And I said, "Honey, why don't you come sit in my lap in the spinny chair?" So we stayed up late that night, and let's face it, I did something I wasn't supposed to do. And I don't want to say it too much, but I put my little pickle in the jar. And then my friend John Barron called the New York Post and said, "Guess what? Donald Trump's sticking it to someone else, but don't tell anybody because I'm his publicist." And then I said, "Isn't Donald the most handsome guy? I mean, all the women are chasing him. You can't get him off him." And it was true. But Marla got pregnant with,
Are you looking for something in that pile of papers?
My daughter,
Are you okay?
Tiffany!
Tiffany.
I made Marla sign an incredible agreement, and the crow came back and said, "Hey, that's pretty brutal what you're doing to Ivana." And I said, "Shut up, crow. Tell me about the new daughter, Tiffany." And the great crow said, "Well, she's sweet." And I said, "Oh, great, wonderful. I went one daughter too far." And Marla turned out to be a real drip. She was nothing like the Sports Illustrated version of her that was wet, quiet, and in a bikini. Instead, she was dry, loud, and real. All she wanted to do was sit and talk or go on vacation. So with Marla, it was even shorter than with Ivana. We divorced after 6 years of marriage, one short of the 7-year itch. Always get out before the 7-year itch, because when the itch happens, it's a very expensive cream to get rid of it. So I pushed Marla off the wagon train, and it was time for Melania. I was at a nightclub to meet a friend, and I saw her. And what a beautiful model she was. I thought, what is this, the movie Mannequin? Is she going to become a mannequin at midnight every night? But then I figured out it was more like Weird Science or the cartoon movie where he falls in love with a cartoon. It's every guy's dream to use a machine to create a woman and then change her because you can. And we're getting closer to that. It's just a shame Bill Pullman won't be there to see it. So I turned to Melania and I said, "Are you the coat check girl?" And she said, "No." And I said, "Will you marry me?" And a few years later, she did. Melania. I love women who are named after vowels, so when I finish saying their name, my mouth can go soft, open, and wet for a kiss. I'm a kissy boy. And here's the thing. I also pick these names because I can't learn a new way to say a woman's name. So I keep them in the ballpark of some sort of aya. And our relationship, I really believe this, our relationship is based off the fact that our relationship is over. Finally, I found the love of my life, a woman who didn't like me before we got married. Nobody likes me. Who could love me? Nobody could love me. I'm too great. Now, the night I met Melania, after I gave her my coat ticket and she walked away, the crow came to me one last time, and it said, "Don't have a fifth kid, whatever you do." And I said, "Shut up, crow, and blow me." And the crow blew me. His sharp beak. Ooh, it was so hot. And you can make eye contact because there were 7 eyes. So there's always one to catch. And then I woke up and it was a year later. And I was underneath the chocolate fountain and Melania saved me. I almost drowned in the Mar-a-Lago chocolate fountain. You've seen it.
Yes.
She picked me up and she took me to the bedroom. I knew to put the red sheets on tonight because I was going to break my seal. I had stayed a virgin this entire time.
The Campaign. Diary. White House Correspondents' Dinner, 2011.
I walked the red carpet from my limousine with all the real press attending the dinner. The photographers on the red carpet were the lowest of the low. I was happy to give them a little star power. An old woman asking for autographs, her name was Helen Thomas, blogger boys with their crumpled headshots, and I was greeted at the door by Wolf Blitzer, who was staring confusedly at the grandfather clock. His beard was stinky with mustard from the veal sausage he enjoys before every appearance. There were so many beautiful women greeting me at the door. Obviously, D.C. had turned out its 5 top 10s. There's no decent ass in this city. Just a bunch of over-the-hill dye jobs with nothing better to do than ask you questions all the time. I looked down at my table. An unattractive purple cloth covered it. Mauve. Boring. And the cutlery was standard cater-issued cutlery. I know that better than anyone else. We do a lot of catering jobs at the Trump Tower, and they're always signature bone china. Only the finest from China. China from China. I looked to my left, and who would be sitting at my table but none other than Andrea Mitchell. Word around town is that her husband asks her to dress up as Ayn Rand, or he can't get a stiff beam in his building. And there was Phil Donahue, a man, a great man, and such a great interviewer, whose interview with me is so timeless that it is part of my post-coital ritual. Item. Steve Bannon was seen exiting Spirit Walking, currently the hottest occult bookstore in D.C. Steve took some time to chat with a Wiccan masseuse while browsing the dollar book bucket. Was that a little boy serving cocktails? No, it was just Rachel Maddow bringing drinks to her table. But boy, oh boy, does she look like the smoothest little boy you'd have working in your backyard? I was lucky enough to see that human barrel of fermented cheese, Sean Hannity, lumbering up to me. Sean's a tough guy. He's got a haircut like a 1920s oil baron. He's got the attitude to match, but he's great on the phone. He loves to chat, which is a lost art. Sean asked me how my night was going. I said, fantastic. I'm here for food, laughs, and fun. Finally, I sat at my table, even if it was that caramel imposter standing up at the podium. The truth was, I was with my peers. Item, who's that buying a box of Just for Young Men who want to look distinguished at CVS? David Gregory's roots are showing. I didn't know who Seth Meyers was. I never watched that show. But I knew who Michael Myers was because he was very frightening in my favorite Halloween movie, Wayne's World. Seth Meyers was first up at the podium, and boy was this guy boring. The thing guys like him don't get is that when they send me up, it makes people who like me even more. By the time he finished with his jokes, I wasn't paying attention. I was more interested in the beautiful centerpiece. And by that, I mean the woman under the table. Item, it's true. Legendary newsman Howard Fineman has 2 copies of every post-presidential election Newsweek. One has the actual winner on the cover, and the other is the cover if the other candidate had won. So his house is useless for helping a time traveler get a handle on his situation. With no one to seduce or grab or berate, I started sinking inside myself. But then suddenly the clouds opened up, and I became the topic of conversation again. But it wasn't the funny guy talking. I knew this voice. I could hear him saying my name, but there was a tugging sensation inside me that kept pulling me down. I never sweated so much in my life. Someone must have changed the lights, because I could only see straight forward in front of me. And in red! It was a wild lighting design they did. Totally immersive performance, because I felt sick. It must have been the quail egg appetizer. But suddenly all I could see were mouths moving as a slow hum was building in my head, a ringing in my ears and my own heartbeat rattling in my chest. I couldn't catch my breath. Was I having a heart attack? No, I'm too healthy for that. But something was going on. Something was opening inside of me. It felt like poison in my stomach, or maybe a fire in my belly. I'm not sure, but every time that big fake opened his mouth and said my name, I felt my blood rise. I said to myself, I gotta get rid of this guy. I gotta do it somehow. The birth certificate thing wasn't working, so maybe I had to take him out. I heard my name repeated over and over again, an awful and inappropriate assault on my character, which is totally incredible. As I heard this false president sputtering such lies, I felt something crack open in my head. It was as if light was crowding around my eyes, my stomach turned, the sour-smelling sweat ran down my back. I've had this feeling before. This is the same feeling when Mother used to speak to me, or I'd get called out in class for not doing my homework. And I know when I feel this feeling, I know there's only one thing I can do. Whatever I think of in that moment, without thinking twice, do it as hard as possible. And this time, it was run for president.
Interview. This American carnage starts now. Mr. President, you descending down the escalator at Trump Tower to announce your candidacy has become an iconic moment in history.
It's a great moment.
Did you know when you were coming down that escalator that you were about to change the course of history?
I didn't know. I had no idea. I didn't know what I was doing. In fact, I didn't know why I was on the escalator. Melania said to me, let's go down to the lobby for a second. And I said, let's go down to the lobby. Let's go down to the lobby. Let's go down to the lobby and buy a Diet Coke at the newsstand. It's a little joke I do for her every day. She loves it so much. She always goes, what is that? What is that? And I say, well, in old movies, they'd always have a little song in the movie theater. And she says, oh, Donald, I'm bored. And then she goes into the other room. So it was a total surprise. It was like a surprise party for me. And so I got to the podium and I said, you know what? I'm going to run for president because there's already a podium here. And I announced, listen, it was the first time I had ever tried to run for president recently. We'd been focus testing slogans and buying data, and we had all the odds against us. We were a small operation. I mean, I got a lot of money, but not like the super PACs, not like the Bushes. I mean, Bush, this guy had $418 million to start out. I had nothing. So we thought we'd give it our best shot. But we knew the people were on our side, and we had real issues to fix. Nobody was talking about immigration before me. Nobody was talking about immigration. Nobody was talking about the wall. Nobody was talking about these things. So we took the escalator. The escalator roll that was heard around the world. Sort of a low hum. So I went down and I gave my speech and then I went upstairs and the next thing I knew I was president of the United States. When was the inauguration? Like a week later?
No, sir. It was almost 2 years.
Okay, well, we had a lot of work to do. There were a lot of big guys in there. 17 of the best. The best Republican candidates. Some of the best. You had Chris Christie, big fat guy, big tub. You gotta have one of those. Gotta have a big fat guy. Every comedy does. And you had the little guy, Rand Paul, who was the old lady who could rap. Jeb Bush. I thought Jeb Bush was gonna be way tougher. He was boring. Jeb had nothing to do. He was the Terry Schiavo of candidates, I said. You know who I liked? And I'll tell you this, Ted Cruz, total slimeball. But that guy can fight. He's a real rat. So anyway, that was how the introduction began.
They said that both you and Hillary Clinton had a lot in common.
Crooked Hillary.
Because you both...
Say it.
Crooked Hillary.
There you go.
Because you both spent a lot of time... More than any other candidates in history, you returned home to sleep in your bed almost every night.
That's right. Only my bed. My bed is incredible. It's adjustable. It's Posturepedic and Craftmatic and Jurassic. All the wonderful icks that we all know. And it had a remote that could tip itself up. And it's incredible because you can sit in the bed, eat TV tray dinner, watch the news, watch yourself on the news. And I like, and I gotta say, I like my own bed. Even Melania doesn't sleep in that bed. I sleep in my own bed. It's the prototype for the Trump Hotel mattress, but don't tell Pruitt. He still has keys to the White House. So I would always go home. I don't like staying in other hotels because you don't know the cameras, the people who are seeing you and watching you in the dirty beds.
You had a lot of turnover in your campaign between Corey Lewandowski and Paul Manafort and Carter Page and all the people who came on board to your campaign and...
Crooks! All crooks! and they had nothing to do with the campaign. They had very little to do with the campaign, okay? I mean, Carter Page was basically sitting around there doing nothing. And you had, who's the other guy? See, I don't even know the other guy. None of them worked there. They all got tied up in the whole Russia thing. They got tied up from the beginning, which is why none of them worked there. They never worked there because they were already with Russia, and Russia was with Russia, and I didn't know them. They didn't work for me. Manafort, that guy did the convention and the Ukrainian platform, and that was it. He was basically a big party planner. That guy knows nothing. Nobody knows anything except the people currently working for me. Until they also resign or get indicted, and then I never worked with them. Nobody who was talking to Russia was on my campaign. So if somebody was on my campaign, and it seemed like they were talking to Russia, they just weren't on my campaign. Eric wasn't there. No one was there who talked to Russia. If you talked to Russia, you were ignored like a ghost. The Russians would come in for a meeting. They would sit down. No one would be in the room, and then they'd leave. Nobody there. They just sat in the room. They talked into the air and left. And that's how it worked through the whole campaign. And they were just talking about adoptions anyway, which is babies. And we all know that.
Was winning the presidency the hardest thing you've ever done?
It was an incredible victory. We won the Electoral College by a huge margin. It was the biggest margin since they invented the notepad. But I'll tell you, it was tough. Iowa, tough place. Ted Cruz won first. I came in second. And in every state, I'd see the coal miners. And they'd say, where's the mine? And I'd say, I promise you, I'm going to dig a mine. I'm going to find the caves. And we're going to get you back in the caves. And here's why Iowa went for Ted, okay? Stupid Iowa. They don't have caves. No coal. They only have corn. You dig underground, it's just more corn. And let me tell you something. There's no such thing as clean corn technology. Because I've looked in the toilet, and there's nothing clean about that. And it's not a fossil fuel. A fossil fuel would be taking the dinosaur and burning it in a furnace, which is a great opportunity. My base. You know, some people would say I was so good at finding my base that I'm the ace of base. Because I saw the signs, and there were so many signs. This base is troubled. They want to work. They're the forgotten man and forgotten women of this country. The people who are discriminated against just because they're white. Just because they're white. Just because they're poor. And they don't have anything. And they don't have anything to piss in. And the worst thing about the forgotten man and the forgotten woman is that they forgot each other. Nobody's dating. Everything's online now. And there's no forgotten man or forgotten woman dating website. But the truth is that these people didn't forget one thing, their heritage. And the truth is that we need it, everybody. And listen, you want to walk around with a tiki torch? Maybe you're going to go to a barbecue. That's not my business. David Duke, brilliant guy, tough guy. But I disavow. Daily Stormer, I've read it all the time, and I disavow it.
Just back to all the turnover in your campaign, the NSA was monitoring Carter Page and Mike Flynn because they thought they were participating in what was essentially an espionage operation against the United States.
No, excuse me. The dossier is totally fake. There's no collusion. The dossier was fake. Like I'm going to make a pee-pee on somebody? I'm going to let somebody pee-pee on my bed? Are you crazy? I'm not going to let someone pee-pee on my bed. They pee-pee in a bucket and dump it on me on the porch. Why don't you try it? See what happens. I won't touch you.
I'm not going to.
Do it.
I'm not going to try.
Okay, you have another question? Ask me.
Okay, so you really came alive at your rallies. Your base loved the rallies. What do you think it is about your rallies that allows you to connect so directly with people?
I'm the same as them. I'm just a guy who's up there talking. And they're all talking to me. And we have a good time. We have free t-shirts. We have a wet t-shirt contest in the back. We connect because we speak the same language. They hate a lot of things. And I hate a lot of things. And we hate those things together. And we like publicly beating up black people and gay people in a large arena. Or at least thinking about it and pantomiming a little bit. And if any of them stop paying attention, I just start talking about the wall. Or I'd say Iran's really dangerous and we might get nuked. and I used to spend a lot of time doing prop work with my belt and whether Ben Carson could get stabbed. Boy, that was some great material. The truth is, we had so much fun. We did it all the time, and we did it right. And at the end of the day, when we'd leave, there'd be a good old-fashioned riot. I remember one time, some guy tried to jump up on the stage, and I got scared, and I turned, and I ran around like a cuckoo chicken. And then they said, "You're fine, you're fine." So I continued giving the speech, and I was sweating the entire time, because I thought that guy was going to get me, but he didn't. And it's pretty amazing, folks, that nobody even really tried. Hillary, you go to her rallies, it's like, ooh, ooh, can I have some tea, Grandma? Boring. It was like a bridge party. And all the ladies were so stupid. There's a reason there's a glass ceiling, and it's so you can look up skirts. Let me ask you something. Let me ask you something. You want a drink? You like whiskey?
I wouldn't turn down a little.
Good, good. Here, I got you one. They tell me it's good stuff. I got it from Canada. They need strong stuff up there because they're so shy. Is this good? You want a double? Is this good? Okay, now I got a question for you.
Okay.
So here's the scenario, writer guy. How's your drink? Is it good?
Yes, sir.
Good. So here's the scenario. Okay. Doors open. 16-year-old comes into the room. One of my pageant girls. Universal girl. Universal. Beautiful, so beautiful.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so she's pretty. And she's looking at you, and she's like, what's your name again?
Kelsey.
She's like, ooh, Kelsey, I know I'm only 16, but I'm a woman.
Sir, I'm reminding you, we are on the record.
That's fine. And then,
I'd like to take you off the record for this.
No, do not take me off the record.
I'd really like to take you off the record.
And then she says to you, she says, you can do whatever you want with me. And your wife will never know. And you can have the next 2 hours with me, and I'll be a pleasure machine.
No, sir, I'd like to stop this conversation.
And right before you kiss her, she goes, and by the way, I'm your daughter from the future, but I came back in time. Would you do her?
No, sir.
Would you really?
I wouldn't even before the time travel.
But she's come back from the future, so she's not even real yet. Look, I'd do it, and so would you. Here, you want another drink?
This is good stuff.
Here, enjoy. We're done working tonight. This is our time. Let's have some fun. You want to go out?
I guess I'd go out for one.
For one? Let's go out for one. You mind if it's a strip club? You mind if there's girls?
I don't mind.
I hear you. There will be girls. I know a place. There's girls. And, you know, it's not a problem if you want to. They want you to. You're coming in with the president, you know? I used to get this kind of thing going in New York, and I gotta say, it's even crazier down here. I mean, things people get up to. You wanna go?
I'll check it out.
Girls, college girls, you want that? You wanna get some?
Yeah, okay, let's go.
You hear that? You hear that, sweetie?
Jesus Christ, Kelsey.
Now you got no excuse, baby.
Debate preparation, September 25th. 2016.
You have to prepare.
Roger, I'm doing so incredible. These debates are so easy. They're totally easy. Jesus, slow down with the toast. How much toast do you need? You got bacon and you got a side of sausage. It's too much.
Ronald, you have to prepare. You have an entire apparatus you can take advantage of. We have our shows. We have the network. We have talk radio. We have the internet. Everybody's going to line up behind you. You just have to decide what you're going to say, and you have to say it. And you have to get out ahead of this stuff, Donald. You have to get out ahead of it. You have to prepare.
Is that a fourth egg under your potatoes?
You can't wing it. You want to hit her on the affairs.
Oh, I want to hit her.
You want to hit her on the affairs. Bill's affairs.
Slick Willie, that guy. He had the black baby, right?
It's hard to say.
I think he did. I bet we can find the black baby. Let's bring a black baby to the debate. He can sit in the front row, and then we'll kick him out.
I'm here to help. Whatever you need.
Did you really make all those moves on those girls? I mean, how many are we talking? How many?
I get around. My wife doesn't mind. My wife doesn't mind a little extracurricular.
Please. Yeah. My wife doesn't mind either. Yeah, that's right. My wife doesn't mind either. Just don't tell her. Just don't tell her anything, okay? What's happening? Are you choking? Are you breathing? Take it slow. Work it down. I can see the lump in your throat. How much sausage did you put in your mouth? I'm taking advice from a guy who's eating meat like a Muppet? Roger, you don't look so good. You know that? You're getting all gray.
What could I do? Can we get Kellyanne in? Kellyanne's here. Kellyanne's ready to prep.
I'm here, sir.
Smartest girl in the room.
I'm prepared to play Hillary, sir, and say some of the uncomfortable, awful, unfair things she might say to you.
Are you loyal to me? Or are you still like Ted Cruz? Be honest.
Nobody likes Ted Cruz.
That's right. See Roger over there? Look at that. Look at his little hands.
Hi, sweetie.
You see those little hands?
Look at you.
Those hands have been in more honeypots than you can imagine.
Look at you. Now come over here. You want to sit in my lap while I finish my sausage?
Roger! That's enough. Not here, Roger. Kellyanne's respectable. What is this, a Bob Guccione movie on Cinemax? Guccione was one of the greats. If you can get Guccione on the phone, I'll tell you, that guy's got stories. He'd beat the pants off of you. You're shooting fish in a barrel over at Fox, right? All those honeys doing the news? I mean, you must be losing your mind. You must be losing your mind!
Hey, it's good to be the boss, huh?
Oh, my God. Pick that up off the floor. It's half chewed.
That's a lump.
That's not your breakfast? The hell is that? The hell is that, then?
All right, all right.
No. Don't all right me, Roger. If you just spat up something that looks like meat, but that's not meat you ate, then what is that?
Listen, I got my own problems over at Fox. That's why I'm working on your campaign. I'm not there much longer. I'm on my way out. The writing's on the wall. What I think we should do...
It's unbelievable. It's so unfair.
You make the best showing you can in this campaign. And if you win, you're the President of the United States.
Oh, no. I don't want that. We're supposed to make it look good, but not good enough.
And if you lose, we start our own network. We buy out True TV, or IFC, or Spike. You win, you're the President. Now, hold on. It wouldn't be that bad.
No.
Don't worry. You're going to lose. You'll lose, and we buy our own cable network where anything goes as far as the staff is concerned, and then we cry foul for 8 years.
Let me tell you something. Kellyanne, do you know this? Roger Ailes is the only guy I've ever met who fingered four women at the same time. Unbelievable.
Sir, I'm not...
Tell the story, Roger. Tell the story.
Mr. President.
What? You like to flirt? We flirt. You can flirt with Roger.
Sir, you're a powerful, charismatic man.
Thank you.
This guy's the pig from hell.
Roger, wake up! Roger, wake up! What's that now? That's definitely not sausage. And it's not bread either.
Get over here, Kellyanne.
Sir, please.
Get over there, Kellyanne. Get over there.
Oh, my God.
It wasn't that bad. I watched. It wasn't that bad. All right, Kellyanne. All right. Okay, great. Time for you to go.
But I was going to play Hillary Clinton. That's why I'm here.
Well, I thought you'd want to leave after what happened.
He just grabbed my thigh and shuddered for 30 seconds. It was embarrassing, and now he's passed out.
Wait, put a mirror under his face and see if he's alive. No, get closer, Kellyanne. You can't get breath from there. Get closer.
He's alive. He's still chewing on a little piece of pork roll.
Here's the problem, Kellyanne. Kellyanne, here's the scary thing. We didn't order pork roll. There's no pork roll anywhere in the building. So where'd that pork roll come from?
Maryland, sir?
What? That's not the answer. I think Roger's producing his own pork roll out of his body.
Sir, we really have to prepare.
I am preparing. What if they ask about this?
They're not going to, sir. The debate is tomorrow.
Roger is a genetically altered creature who produces pork products. That's the only answer. You know, I notice his tongue looks larger and more black today. You think there's something wrong with him? Roger! Roger, you've done a lot of conquesting. Tell me your best one.
Well, I remember there was this one honey. It was a field reporter. We'd send her out for some man-on-the-street work.
A working girl.
She filled in for Greta Van Susteren a few nights, and she was moving up in the business, so I invited her up to my office, and I told her if she wanted to move up at the network, she knew what to do. So I leaned back in my chair, I put my hands up behind my head, and she quit.
What? Wow!
That's right. I said, you know what to do. And she says, I'm tendering my resignation.
And then what did she do? Did she blow you?
No. She sued us and she won.
Whoa.
You know, Bill O'Reilly has told me this story. He had this beautiful producer that worked for him.
I know the one.
And they'd travel together and they'd stay at hotels. And he'd always make sure he had the hotel room booked next door to this honey.
I know this trick. Incredible trick.
And he said one night they'd been down at the hotel bar at the Ramada, and Bill O bought her a few extra drinks, and he walked her back up to her room.
But she took them, right? She took them? She took them?
That's right.
She took them. She took them. She took the drinks. She took the drinks. She took the drinks. She took the drinks. So then what happened?
They got up to her room, and she said goodnight and shut the door. But Bill was in the next room hitting the minibar. So after an hour or so, he went tap, tap, tap on the little door between the hotel rooms.
And she was ready.
No.
What do you mean?
No. She screamed and then called one of the other producers, who was a guy. He switched rooms with her and then she quit.
What?
And then she sued us and won.
Whoa, whoa, that's hot. Let me tell you a great story. This is going to top everything else. So, we were doing Miss Universe, and I was working on The Apprentice at the time, and I had to fly to where the Miss Universe was being held out there, which was in Georgia or wherever it was, somewhere, but I had to be on set at The Apprentice, and there was this little thing, she was a little dainty girl, and she reminded me so much of my daughter, so beautiful, and one day we had to go fly same day in the jet, as you know, from the set to go check out the venue for the pageant. And this little honey, she was a PA.
She worked for you?
Yeah, she worked for me.
Nice.
Everybody works for me. Everybody works for me, Roger. High five.
I can't.
High five.
I can't.
Just push your little thing into my hand.
I can't.
That's good enough. And so in the morning, I ate pork sausage like you do, but I also had salted butter on my toast. And I had two chocolate donuts, and I had extra salty breakfast burrito. And I get on the plane, and Roger, she's so beautiful. She gets out of the crowd and sits across from me, and I say, this is it. We're in the air for 2 hours, and I know I'm getting some real action. Well, as the plane takes off, I don't know if it was the pressure or the fact that I hadn't had any water in days, but I started pitching forward and losing my vision and getting dizzy. But what happened when I fell forward? I fell right into the lap of this beautiful girl. And I tried to start rooting around, but then I was shaking and drooling, and she was crying. And boy, was she crying. No one makes a girl cry the way I do. You know what I mean? The right way. Well, next thing you know, I'm in a hospital in Georgia, and there's some country doctor guy, you know, some guy with a hayseed. Might as well have had a hayseed in his mouth. And he says to me, you have too much salt in your blood. You have too much salt. And I said, where's the girl? And they said, the woman on the plane? I said, yeah. And they said, she's right here. And I said, I have so much salt in my blood because of all the backup in my balls. And everyone got real quiet in the room. And then the PA said, I quit. And the doctor quit with her. And now they're married. Can you imagine that? Anyway, one of the greats. So how are we on the debate prep?
Can I have another one of these?
Another breakfast? Are you crazy, Roger? One of your eyes is filled with blood. Now tell me honestly, it's just us here. Kellyanne doesn't count. How long does it take for you to pull your penis out from all your thigh and stomach fat?
It's a process of elimination.
Mine's like origami. I gotta fold it up. I basically make a crane, and then I have to have my pee-pee. When I met Xi Jinping, I'm gonna say, Jin, thank you. Thank you for origami. For without it, I wouldn't get to have fun with my wife, Melania.
Sir!
What, Kellyanne?
I dressed as Hillary Clinton today, and I memorized questions that Hillary Clinton would ask. I want to help you, sir.
Fine, let's do the questions.
Why would the American people elect a businessman who's gone bankrupt 8 times?
Wrong. First off, why would Hillary ask me that question? She doesn't run the debate. Trick question, right, Kellyanne?
No, she'll ask you some questions.
She will?
Yeah, she'll have the opportunity to challenge you on a few points, sir.
Okay, they'll trust me because I'm not you, you witch! What do you think of that?
Pretty good. That'll do it.
Okay.